This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Trees do a lot of work to keep our atmosphere and climate healthy by capturing and storing carbon. And when we talk about solutions to climate change, planting more trees is one idea that often gets brought up. Some world leaders have gotten on board saying they'll join an effort to plant a trillion trees in their countries. They include President Trump, who talked about it in January of this year.
We're committed to conserving the majesty of God's creation and the natural beauty of our world. Today, I'm pleased to announce the United States will join 1 Trillion Trees Initiative being launched here at the World Economic Forum. 1 Trillion Trees.
A new study published this week in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science looks into how much of a difference large-scale tree plantings can make in offsetting carbon emissions. The authors found that it's not just how many trees you plant, but where they get planted. Grant Domke is a research scientist and leads the Carbon Science Group in the Forest Inventory and Analysis Program within the United States Department of Agriculture Forest Service. He's co-author of that study. Grant, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Nice to be with you, Rob.
Well, talk about the impact that broadly, first of all, before we get into the specifics of your study, that having more trees, planting more trees can make on taking carbon out of the atmosphere.
Yeah, sure. Well, right now, the existing forest land in the United States offset about 14% of CO2 emissions economy-wide each year. So the contribution of forests where they currently exist is really massive in the United States. But what we found in this study is that there's an opportunity on existing forest land that's currently understocked or non-stocked to enhance that or increase that contribution.
Yeah, the idea, if I'm reading your paper right, isn't just that more trees will help, but that putting them in particular places will help a lot. Can you talk about where those opportunities are?
Yeah, so in this study, what we did was break down really state by state and by ownership class. So broad ownership classes like federal lands, state and local lands, and private forest lands, where the understocked forest land was. So these are lands that have less than 35% of the land area is occupied by trees. But historically, those areas were forested. And what we found was that particularly in the Pacific Northwest, Montana, Idaho, and Florida, those states really represent the greatest opportunities. And in each of those areas, the ownership patterns are a little bit different in each place. But in the Pacific Northwest, it's really on federal lands where the greatest opportunities exist. Whereas in the eastern U.S., where the majority of forest land is privately owned, those areas represent the greatest opportunities. So I think a novel and sort of unique aspect of the study is that we focused on forest land, number one, not areas that would require conversion from another land use, but really the low-hanging fruit. Where is forest currently exist and productive forest land? So we know that there's evidence or a history of forests growing in these areas, and currently they're understocked. So there's opportunities to enhance the sequestration capacity of those sites in each of these 48 states in the U.S.
I'm not a scientist, but a trillion trees sounds like a lot. By taking advantage of, like you said, the low-hanging fruit, could the United States meet its global share of that trillion-ish trees?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, another part of this study, which was pretty fascinating to me and my co-authors, was as part of the National Forest Inventory Program in the U.S., that's where I sit and my co-authors also sit. We used more than 130,000 plots distributed across the 48 lower state lower 48 states, and we used those plots to really estimate for context purposes how many trees currently exist in the U.S. And we found that there are about 1.38 trillion trees currently in the U.S. that include seedlings, and the majority of those trees are seedlings. And so right now, what we found was that the U.S. is planting around 1.2 billion trees per year, has the capacity to plant about 1.2 billion trees each year, which really isn't sufficient to restock all of those understocked forest lands. But yeah, it's the trillion trees sounds like a big number, but we've already got 1.38 trillion trees in the U.S. And remember, this is a global effort. And so exactly what the U.S. contribution will look like I think is to be determined. But what I can say is I've been tracking this really since the World Economic Forum, and there have been massive commitments from private entities, corporations, the federal government, and others to restock and reforest a lot of areas. And so I think we're on the right track right now. And, you know, what this study found was we can increase sequestration capacity by about 20%. And what that means is we could, say, offset 14% right now with those 1.38 trillion trees. We could increase that by about 4 or 5%, which is, it sounds like a small amount, but actually in the grand scheme of things ends up being a pretty substantial increase in emissions offsets.
We're talking to Grant Domke, head of the Carbon Science Group and the Forest Inventory and Analysis Program at the U.S. Forestry Service, looking at the impact that reforestation can have on carbon emissions and climate change. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the idea of planting 1 trillion trees across the globe to help offset carbon emissions? If you live in or near forest land here in Wisconsin, how do you feel about the health or management of that landscape? If you own land or live near state park land, would you like to see more trees there? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to Grant Domke right now, research scientist with the U.S. Forestry Service, looking at forests, carbon emissions, and how much of a difference planting billions of new trees could have on climate change. Grant, I'll start asking some of the, you know, I don't know, dumb questions maybe that pop into my head when I hear this now. Does it matter what kind of trees?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, Rob. And it's one that we really need to take into consideration. So not only do we want to make sure that we're concentrating these tree plantings in areas where we know we have evidence of trees growing in the past, you know, to really maximize that investment, we also want to make sure that the trees we're planting there are native to the area, they're capable of tolerating the climate, and also thinking about the future and how the climate might be changing, how disturbance regimes might be changing. We're all familiar with what's happening in the Western United States right now, and you know, I think that you know, certainly as a research scientist in the Forest Service resonates with me in terms of thinking about making sure that we're putting the right trees in the right places to ensure success of those investments.
And you mentioned out west, we've got, of course, the wildfires there. Do those fires put a significant dent in our tree biomass that it affects our carbon mitigation efforts?
Yeah, certainly it does. You know, so there's this abrupt emission, of course, as those trees are combusted and some of that biomass returns to the atmosphere. But also it has long-term consequences in terms of the sequestration capacity of those sites. So if trees aren't completely combusted, but they're killed, those trees no longer can sequester carbon because they're dead. They're not able to interact with the atmosphere and pull that carbon from the atmosphere. And so, you know, some of these really extreme events, what we're seeing is that they're burning so hot and they're so severe that it's setting these systems back to a state where, you know, trees may not grow, or it's really challenging to establish or regenerate these forests. So, again, I think planting in the right places and also thinking about disturbances and historic disturbances and also paying attention to how the climate's changing and how these disturbance patterns are changing. We really need to take all of this into consideration when making decisions on where and what to plant.
Got an email from James. James says, do prairies do the same thing? Are prairies comparable to tree planting? An important issue here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, that I think is a unique aspect to this study. You know, as part of this analysis, we also looked at areas outside of forest land and opted, at least for this paper, to really focus on forest land because we recognize the value of other ecosystems, prairies being one of them. And yes, prairies do sequester a substantial amount of carbon, and the majority of that carbon is actually sequestered and stored in the below ground biomass of these short and tall grass prairies. So the root systems of these prairies can be quite substantial. And where trees sequester and store about two-thirds of their biomass in the above-ground portion, so the things that you and I see, the trunk, the bole, and the branches and leaves. Grasses, on the other hand, store about two-thirds of their biomass in the below-ground structures, like the root system. So it's a little bit different in terms of how they store carbon, but the process of photosynthesis, that act of removing carbon from the atmosphere or using carbon through photosynthesis to really produce energy for those plants to grow, is exactly the same between grasses and trees.
Yeah, the science here, I mean, it takes me back to my dimly remembered ninth grade biology class. This is pretty straightforward science. Plants use trees, or sorry, trees and other plants use carbon, and they keep it, and they put out not carbon stuff, right?
That's exactly right. So they store this carbon, which is a greenhouse gas, is CO2, which is a greenhouse gas, and in return, they also release oxygen, which is important to all living things as well. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone would argue that planting trees is a good thing. And, we really took an angle here of looking at the contributions of these tree plantings from a carbon and climate perspective, but they also provide a myriad of other benefits, in terms of improving water quality and providing wildlife habitat and soil stabilization. So planting trees provides a multitude of benefits. Carbon sequestration and storage is just one of them.
To be clear, though, when it comes to carbon sequestration, this trillion tree idea would only be part of the solution, right? We're not going to fix this just by planting trees.
Exactly. And that's really how we close this paper out, is we basically say that, reducing emissions is really important, and we all need to do our part in terms of finding ways to reduce emissions overall. And that this tree planting effort, first of all, trillion trees is really broader than just planting trees. It's also a conservation movement to maintain forest land and natural ecosystems in their current state, and also restore ecosystems in other cases, and actively manage these forest ecosystems. But it's really only one piece of a broader portfolio of things that we must do and we must consider to really change the dial or turn the dial on climate change and start to reduce overall emissions, I think, is the big piece.
And Grant, in just our last minute, if somebody's out there thinking, hey, I own a little bit of land, it's got a few trees, I could have more, is there a way they can kind of get on board and get information on how they can plant at least a few of those trillion trees?
Yeah, I think there are a variety of entities out there. So American Forests is a nonprofit organization who is really leading up the regional Trillion Trees effort. They've got resources on their website, the American Forest Foundation, the U.S. Forest Service. You could reach out to the U.S. Forest Service, as well as here in Wisconsin. We work a lot with the Wisconsin DNR. It's a great organization. They've got a really active research program and management program, a number of tree nurseries. You could reach out to your local DNR office to find out where you might find trees that are suitable for the sites that you're interested in planting them on.
Grant, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob.
Grant Domke is a research scientist, leads the Carbon Science Group in the Forest Inventory and Analysis Program with the U.S. Forestry Service. He talked this today about what a large-scale tree planting could do to help offset carbon emissions. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. A new study shows that 25% of people in the U.S. are experiencing symptoms of depression. That's about three times as many as before the pandemic. Among those hardest hit, those with a lower income and smaller savings, as well as people severely affected by the pandemic, losing jobs, say, or going through the death of a loved one. But the rest of us can feel down, too, with limited social interactions, policy disagreements, canceled events, and other disruptions. So how can we stay positive during these various trials, and how much is happiness affected by where we live? Miriam Keating is a professor at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and a licensed clinical psychologist. Miriam, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
Well, this is a tough time to be happy. What kind of things do we know out there in a difficult time where a lot of our avenues toward happiness might be closed or limited? Are you seeing being successful for people right now?
That's a great question. I mean, clearly there has been a cumulative load of stressful events, and people are kind of using humor in some ways, right, to joke about 2020. What else is 2020 going to bring us? And humor does help. That is something that's important to kind of stay above the fray, and find those pieces of places where you can laugh about what's going on. I think one of the ways to think about it is just changing our mindset. At the beginning of all this, illness, I think people went into it with a sense of in a few weeks, things will go back to normal, right? And so we can kind of maybe in the future laugh about that now or later. But I think that, you know, changing our mindset and recognizing that we're going to have to take it one day at a time is really useful.
Now, we saw the group Wallet Hub took a look at research and tried to figure out which state is happiest. They had a bunch of criteria. Wisconsin came in, I think, number 18 on the list. You study a lot how we can build happiness, not just at our own individual level, but at the community level. Maybe the state is too big. What kind of things can we do in a community, a town, neighborhood, whatever, to build a better, I guess, happiness environment?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And it helps us to think about that community level. In some ways, there's a lot of growth and learning we can take from this experience. And if we take that moment to breathe and stop and pause and say, what am I getting out of difficulty and adversity? There's usually a lot to learn. And in the case of pandemic, we're going through it as a global community, really. So first of all, there's a shared experience, even though everybody has their own version of what that experience looks like. It does help to know that other people are going through it at the same time. And then it makes you realize how much we really need each other. And on that note, thinking about your neighbors, as well as kind of the bigger shared place that we all live on, planet Earth. And so at the same time as all this in California, in my state that I live in, you know, we're going through wildfires and different elements that are reminding us of some of the other aspects of climate change and things that we need to take into consideration. And we can't really deal with that just as individuals. We really need to come together. And then finally, just in terms of community and where that lands for our own kind of selfish reasons, over and above everything else, social support, your community network, the people that you can rely on and turn to during times of distress and stress, comes out to be the number one factor that really helps our emotional and mental health and our well-being. So it's really a good time to nurture those relationships and realize if we don't have enough of them or we're not taking time with those relationships, that this is the time to really realize what's important in life and to really nurture those relationships in your neighborhood, in your communities, and to think about what you can do to make the world a better place.
One thing that struck me about that happiness by state study, the number one, two, and three states, Hawaii, Utah, and Minnesota. Now that suggests to me that maybe you could build happy communities no matter what the weather is, no matter what the cultural background is. Three very different places did well on this. Is there something we can learn from that?
That's an interesting point, and I love it because really it shows that it's not necessarily just the environment that you live in, but the quality, right, of that environment. And I was lucky enough to actually grow up in Hawaii, so I was pretty excited when I saw Hawaii as number one. but you know, a lot of factors go into of these rankings, and I think instead of feeling, oh, where are we at, you know, again, each place, wherever anybody lives, or those of you in Wisconsin, can really think about what are the ways in which we can kind of enrich not only our own happiness, but other people's happiness. And, you know, I think if you go back to each of those three states, you probably would find some commonalities in terms of connection and community, sense of community, and the ways that people help one another, even though those are really different states. There's a lot of, I would think, you know, actually a lot of family and connections that help one another during stressful times.
Talking to Mariam Kia Keating at the University of California, Santa Barbara, licensed clinical psychologist and a professor there, talking about happiness and building happier individuals and even communities, even in tough times. All right, Mariam, say somebody's out there listening and thinking, yeah, I would like to help boost happiness, not just for me, not just for my family. I would like to be part of making my community, whatever level they want to describe that, a happier place. What is something a person could do to do something like that?
I love that question. And I love that you just talked about planting trees, because in some ways that's such a wonderful, not just metaphor, it's metaphorical, but it's also something, you know, active that you can do. You know, thinking about I think you do have to start with yourself to some extent, right? You do need to take care of yourself and your own family. It's sort of putting your own oxygen mask on first before you put on, you know, help somebody else with their oxygen mask. So that does mean paying attention to what your needs are and kind of getting to a place where things are going, you know, well, and you've established some supports and meeting your family's basic needs. But really, I think a tree is actually a wonderful metaphor for how you can go about serving your community, so, and your family and yourself, really. So really starting at those roots of some of those basic daily or regular actions that you can take of being involved, of knowing your neighbors, of helping one another on a more regular basis. So finding that area that you want to go and give back to your community, even if it starts out small and it's just within the neighborhood and your street, that's a great place to start. You don't have to go far, and that can make a really big difference. And I think the other thing to know is that doing that kind of work, finding an area where you can contribute, really brings you a sense of meaning and purpose, and ultimately really benefits the person who's the giver, almost more than the one who's receiving it. So we find that time and time again in psychological research. When you go out and you appreciate what you have and you give to others, it really benefits you.
Now let's talk about the other end of this. When a person is at that unhappier moment, a mental health crisis, do we, in general, in the United States, have the services out there, the accessibility of those services, the affordability matters sometimes? Do we have enough in place to help people in those times?
That's a great question. And the answer, you know, the quick answer is probably no, but there's a lot of effort being put into creating opportunities for telehealth so that we can reach out to others, even especially during a time where people are social distancing and in quarantine. And so being able to reach people from where they are is really an important part of bridging some of those gaps. And, you know, I think there's also a lot to be said for natural ways and not just clinical ways of reaching out and creating support networks, peer support networks, creating communities that check in on each other, you know, just knowing your neighbors, those kinds of interventions go a long way. And I think also if we think preventatively, right, instead of waiting for that crisis to happen, if we're there in each other's lives, if we have those networks and we're helping to support one another, we're less likely to need more of the professional level. At the same time, the professional level is important, and there are times where that's what you need. And so reaching out for those kinds of support is really important. And I think it's a really good move in our society that telehealth is actually becoming much more accessible and there's been a big shift because of COVID-19. And I think that's one of the positive aspects of the pandemic.
In our last minute or so, can you leave us with some words of encouragement on how we can look more toward happiness even during tough times?
I hope so. You know, I think, again, taking a moment to be more intentional and learning from adversity really helps us to grow and find more purpose and really be more intentional about how we want to live our lives. So taking that moment to ask yourself, what can I learn from this moment and what has it taught me? Why are we going through such struggle right now? And how can it help me change in the future can really bring us to a new place and really of more happiness, contentment, and living a life with gratitude and purpose and meaning of helping one another is the way to go.
Miriam, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Miriam Kia Keating is professor at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and a licensed clinical psychologist. We talked with her about how we can be happier during difficult times. A new analysis of existing research puts Wisconsin as the 18th happiest state in the nation.